Hey folks, this is your host John Zombro, and we have an exciting show for you today. Let's get right into it. Welcome everyone to episode number 32 of the Lifetime Body Podcast, the podcast that's all about science meeting common sense and helping you to make your body last a lifetime. I'm especially looking forward to today's episode because this episode is entitled How to Commit to a Fitness Program with my good friend, Doug Fletcher. Doug is here to provide some insights that I think many of us are going to find fascinating because he comes from an extensive business background, but has so much wisdom that it applies equally well to the things we do in health, fitness, performance, and longevity. So I'll start off by telling you guys a little bit about Doug, and then we'll go from there. Doug Fletcher is the co-author, along with Tom McMackin, of How Clients Buy, a practical guide to business development for consulting and professional services. Doug currently splits his time between speaking, writing, and coaching on the topic of business development in consulting and professional services, and teaching at the Jake Jabs College of Business and Entrepreneurship at Montana State University. Doug also serves on the board of directors of the Beacon Group, a growth strategy consulting firm headquartered in Portland, Maine. Prior to that, Doug was co-founder and CEO of North Star Consulting Group, a technology-enabled consulting firm that specialized in global web survey projects. Earlier in his professional life, Doug also served as a consultant with the management consultee A.T. Kearney and was trained at General Electric in its leadership development program. He's a graduate of Clemson University and has an MBA from the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business Administration. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here and an honor. With that introduction, we should just wrap up the podcast right now and call her good.
Yeah, any questions? So it's really an honor and a privilege to sit here with you today and do this. And if I was to kind of bring the audience in fully where you and I are on the same page, can you briefly sum up how your extensive business background led you to wind up on a podcast about health, fitness, performance, and longevity?
Boy, that is the million-dollar question of the day. Well, first of all, you and I have known each other for at least a couple of decades, and I've been an admirer of your wisdom, and I've learned a lot from you over the years, and I've been a listener of your podcast for the last few months, for the last 32 episodes, and I hope today we can try to bring together and meld some of the things that that I've learned, you know, from my business career, and some of the things that Tom and I talk about in our book, How Clients Buy, and maybe see how we can weave that into wellness and fitness and health, and maybe have some fun along the way.
Excellent. So, you know, I really enjoyed reading and rereading How Clients Buy, and it's organized around seven key principles. Prior to getting into the principles of How Clients Buy, I know you talk about the problem that exists in some of these aspects of service delivery and also obstacles. And you might want to mention those, but if most specifically, if we could briefly touch on each of those seven items and relate them to making health and fitness decisions and purchases. I know that's a bit of a stretch, but I think together we can, as you say, we can meld this.
Well, let me just start out backing up just a little bit about the book and why we wrote the book, and we'll jump into a little bit about what the book's about. But the book is written for people that are in what we call the expert services, which is a broad category, but it's basically people that are expert at doing something, and we'll just lump in everything from, from accountants, financial advisors, to web designers, on through things like physical therapy and wellness coaches and fitness trainers. And the big distinction is it's people that are doing a service or performing a service rather than than selling a product, right? And interestingly enough, those of us that provide these expert services, people like you and me, we're often highly trained, we're highly educated, in many cases, such as you, highly credentialed with lots of initials and acronyms after their name. But interestingly enough, throughout all of this education and training, we've never been taught how do we get clients, right? And we can't do the work that we want to do and we love doing if we don't have someone to do it for, right? And nowhere along the way have we ever been trained how to do that. And so that was the main reason we wrote the book. We're not taught how to do this in school. And interestingly enough, there's not a lot of books written on this topic. For example, if you go to Amazon and type into the search bar, books on leadership, we actually did this when we were writing the book, and literally at the time, there were nearly 200,000 topics, books on Amazon that came up with leadership in the keyword, right? Now, if you typed in, you know, selling expert services or business development and consulting or something like that, literally there's just a handful of books that have ever been written. So clearly there was an opportunity that this topic had not been over-researched, overwritten about, and so forth. And I think that was one of the reasons why we were able to get a book publisher. The book was published by Wiley this past year. But at any rate, so we wrote the book, and we wanted to write it for people that that were doing expert services that needed to get clients but didn't know how to do it. And we didn't want to write a book about sales. We did. I mean, there's a lot of sales books out there, and most sales books kind of rubbed Tom and me the wrong way. It always seemed to be about tips and techniques and gimmicks and tricks, how to get people to do something or buy something that maybe they didn't necessarily want to buy, right? And it's all about persuasion and negotiation and closing techniques. And I don't know, I think most of us in expert services just don't want to be a salesperson, right? And so what we decided to do was to flip the lens around and put it on the client and write the book from the client's point of view, and chronicle the client's journey through this decision of who to hire. If you're looking at a physical therapist or a web designer or a fitness coach, like, how does a person actually go through the process of choosing who to work with? Now, as to your second question, how do we tie this into our own personal journey about wellness and optimization? We'll have to see where this evolves and how we can tie that in. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the book, it's very well written, and I think the concept is brilliant. But when I looked at it, it really spoke to me about the decision making process that anyone goes through to purchase, let's say an expert or professional services, but also to commit, and believe in and get the most out of. And so that's kind of why I thought, oh, there's some nice parallels here, especially because this is still January when we're recording this, and it should come out fairly soon as well. And so people are doing that right now. They're making their own wellness buying decisions. And so that was really what I thought we'd do, is not necessarily, we're not necessarily trying to overly promote, my services or your services or anything like that. It's more, hey, these are things to be aware of when you're making those decisions. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I think we're going to try to do. And the book has seven key principles in it, which are, I'll let you do more talking about this than me, but they're the things or the premises upon which these commitment, these buying, these purchasing decisions are made. And I'll list them out quickly, and then maybe we can flesh them out a tiny bit. So there's being aware, having an understanding, an interest, respect, trust, and ability. And if we start with aware, Could you say a few things about that principle?
Yeah, so when a prospective client, a person is hiring a professional, an expert to help them, it almost seems self-evident, but the person, in order for me to hire John Zombro, I have to be aware of John Zombro, right? So that's the first step in the seven elements, being aware that that an expert exists, right, on an individual level. And most research suggests that when someone is making a buying decision, that they usually start with a short list of no more than probably three providers in mind. Most people are not looking at the people that end up getting hired are probably not number 30 on that list of top of mind awareness. So really it's about who are the three people that you know of that may be able to help you in this endeavor. And then I'll throw in kind of this kind of like side channel to awareness. In many cases, maybe we don't know three people that could help us. And so we may ask a trusted friend or colleague, hey, do you know of a financial advisor that's good that I might be interested in working with, or a web designer, or a fitness coach? And so sometimes this awareness comes from maybe not our own experiences, but from friends and colleagues and so forth. The second step in the, kind of the client's buying journey is understanding. And what we mean by understanding is, does the prospective client truly understand what the person is expert in, right? So for example, I'll just throw out there this, broad category of engineering or law. Broad fields, right? Well, as an attorney, we might be an expert in real estate law or bankruptcy law or a patent attorney or something like that. But it's the client needs to understand exactly what this person is an expert in. You probably wouldn't hire a real estate attorney for a divorce, right? Mm-hmm. So that creates a unique challenge for us as experts in that, how well are we defining our expertise, and how do we communicate that to people in such a way that if I were to meet someone at a party and they say, hey, I'm looking for a physical therapist that specializes in knee injuries or something like that. Someone comes to mind and says, oh, you need to talk to Tom or Sarah or, something along those lines. So understanding what the person's really expert at. The third thing is interest. And in order for someone to hire someone, it's pretty obvious that they have to be interested in the service that the person's providing, right? So interest comes down to relevance and impact. Is what the person offers relevant to you now? Mm-hmm. And do they have the ability to have a huge impact on that issue? Then we get into the next two topics, which are probably the two most important topics in the whole seven elements of respect and trust. And really, it comes down to the first component we'll just talk about is the person's professional reputation. And that's what we mean by respect, this professional credibility, reputation. And it's like, do we respect this person's wisdom, experience, knowledge? Do they really seem to be good at what they do? And if you pass that litmus test, then, we go on to this concept of trust, which is a big squishy topic. But it really, the way we define it is, it really comes down to, do you think the person the provider, the expert provider, has your best interest in mind? Do they have your best interest in heart? Are they going to be looking out for you, or do they have all other motives that might not necessarily be aligned with your best interest? And then we get into the last two, which are ability and readiness. Ability, it can be as simple as, does the person have the financial resources to hire us? You know, many experts are not inexpensive. And sometimes their hourly fees or their project fees can be, you know, quite substantial. Do they have the do they have the ability to be able to hire us? And then in some cases, not for all, but some providers are selling into an organization, not just to an individual. Like if you're selling into a business or university system or something like that, it's not just one decision maker. Do they have the support of the other key people in the organization? And then the last element is readiness. As we all know, we've got a lot of priorities in our lives. We've got a lot of irons in the fire. We've got a lot of, crisis du jour. Is what we do, has it risen to the top of their to-do list in a way that it's important, right? It's important to do this now. And I think as we get into this topic of wellness and fitness and health is, has this issue of a person's health or fitness or wellness, has it risen to the top of their priority list where they're ready to do something now? And it is early in the year. It's January. You know, many people are starting fresh with a clean slate and many, New Year's resolutions. And I think it is a good time for us to reflect upon our own health and wellness and fitness and think about what our goals are for the year.
Yeah, and as I sat there and sat here and listened to a really nice explanation, eloquent actually, that you did, I started to think about these fitness parallels, these health, diet, exercise program things, and people are aware these days, we all are, of many options, providers, programs. Sometimes it's challenging to vet, especially when what we see on the internet or social media and all the scuttle that tends to happen continuously. And I'm not going to go into any of that specifically today, but I think that's the challenge in trying to make a program fit, is we do these decisions. And a lot of times with fitness, it's not even much of a purchase. It's an investment of self, as opposed to monetary. It's just, okay, these are the things I'm going to do. And so my whole thought is, if we, as listeners to you today, if we're like, okay, well, we're going to use these principles to kind of refine the offerings and weed out the things that probably aren't going to work for us and aren't going to fit. And I think there's some magic in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said something then, and I just my mind started going there, and it had to do with the information that's out there regarding what we should eat, what should we be doing with our workout plans, and God. Sometimes it's hard to know who to listen to. Yeah. And it seems like, and it's one of the things I've enjoyed most about your books, and I do have a lot of respect, professional respect for you, because me, as a consumer of health information, there's a lot of voices out there, and sometimes it's hard to know who to listen to, right? What should we be eating? What should we be doing with our fitness plans? And I love the topic of your, tagline of your podcast where science meets common sense, because I really do think you have a great way of doing all the research for me, reading all the journals and publications. You have a lot of science knowledge and then giving it to me in a common sense way that I can go, okay, I don't need to go read the 200 journals that John just read. I know that John's going to give it to me in a way that I can apply it to my daily life. So thank you.
Oh, certainly. Thank you for those kind words, and you know, I think you're using your own principles there, and that's really, I'll sum it up. You know, that's what we want everyone to do. Where some folks do like really sciencey, really heavy things, and then you know, there are a few who really, whether it's good or not, may be swayed by, you know, what's attractive and what's popular in social media. I think, you know, a lot of times that's not consistent with the best things for health. But most of us do live in this, you know, common sense, practical, applicable realm, or want to get there. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is say, well, you know, when a person needs to make these decisions, you know, what are the nuggets or the nuts and bolts? And there's many people like me doing these things. I want to be in support of all of that, where I want to encourage the consumer not to feel that they have to get overwhelmed with too much science, nor feeling bad about themselves because they're looking on any media platform and they're seeing probably unrealistic photoshopped bodies and programs that you know, are just not designed to affect health and longevity in any way. So moving on, and I think we did a decent job with that. You know, that was my idea of turning your book into fitness advice, and you went along with it, so thank you. Now, you know, if I just talk about wellness programs or, you know, fitness training groups, nutrition projects, support networks, you know, all of these things that we do for our health, they have some things in common with many service businesses, and in many cases represent either one individual practitioner or a company. In How Clients Buy, you distinguish between three different types of service businesses. There's evergreen, there is acute, and there's optimization, or that's the focus of these businesses. Can you describe those categories briefly and then relate how optimization is really where we probably want to focus with our wellness endeavors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when we wrote this book, we wanted to write it for all experts, professionals, consulting and professional services. And it's a big category, right? I mean, there's 6 million Americans alone today that are, that are working in some capacity in these expert services. But as we started really, really peeling the onion on this topic and writing the book, we realized that as we thought more and more about this, while we have a lot in common, you know, a physical therapist has a lot in common with an attorney who has a lot in common with the web developer and so forth, there are differences, and we kind of lumped this broad category of experts into these three buckets that we called evergreen, acute, and optimization. And I'll just describe these three, and maybe you'll think of a fourth or a fifth category, but the first is acute, or excuse me, is evergreen, and these are the type of service providers that you use on a regular basis every month or every quarter or every year forever, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll just give, you know, this one example of like a tax accountant. If you're a business, and most businesses use a tax accountant, and you have a tax accounting firm or an individual that does your taxes, you're going to use that person every quarter of every year for as long as you're in business. And that's what we call evergreen. And, you know, another one might be, you know, say some sort of an HR consulting firm that does background searches on prospective hires. So every month of every year that a business is hiring someone, they're going to be using that, you know, that HR consulting firm to do background checks on new hires and so forth. So they have a different business development challenge than others because of the fact that this is someone that you're going to be working with for, you know, until you choose not to work with that person all the time. And then we thought about this other bucket of professionals, which we call acute. And that's not someone that you work with every month, every year. Maybe you use them once in your life, Maybe you hope you never need them. And I'll just give you an example. Let's say a patent attorney or an intellectual property attorney, right? This is someone that maybe you apply for a patent once in your life. You might not be using that patent attorney every month. What about an orthopedic knee surgeon? You hope you never have to have your knees operated on, but it's probably not something you're going to have operated on every month. Maybe you have it once in your life. What about a bankrupt attorney, a bankruptcy attorney, right? Let's hope we never go through bankruptcy, but if we do, we're probably going to use that person very seldomly. Those people have a different business development challenge because they are not someone that you might think of needing until you need it. Mm-hmm. And then it's acute and it's urgent and it's important and you want to get the very best help, advice, experts you can find. And then the third bucket that we lumped a lot of the rest into is this category called optimization or optimizers. And they're people that provide a service that's very specific and they can make your business or your life better, but it's not required that you do it. For example, maybe you are a growth strategy consultant and your expertise is helping businesses find new sources of revenue. Well, a business doesn't have to go out and hire a growth strategy consultant, right? It's somebody that in theory can make your business better, but you could certainly do it in-house. You don't have to do it at all. It's someone that is an optimizer. Another one might be, like a organizational effectiveness coach, someone that comes in and helps improve or optimize the culture of your organization. It's not required that you hire an organizational effectiveness coach. You have to as the leader of the organization, you have to have the belief that hiring this person is going to somehow make your business better. And the list goes on and on. I'll throw into this category a fitness coach, right? Someone could be very serious about their wellness and health and fitness, but you don't have to hire a trainer, right? You can be self-coached. You can do your own research. You can do your own, training plan, all this. So it has to be someone that's motivated to go out and get someone to help them be better. And that's what we'll lump into that third category of optimization. Maybe there's other categories out there, but these three different buckets or categories of experts have different challenges from a standpoint of how do you get clients. And I throw you and me, both in this last bucket because people can hire us. Hopefully we can help bring some level of help to them, but it's not required that you hire us the same way that you might absolutely need a bankruptcy attorney or a knee surgeon if you found yourself in that sort of situation.
Yeah, and as I was listening to you describe those things, that's kind of what I thought. When we look at health, an evergreen view of a health business might just be the gym membership. You buy the gym membership year after year. There you go. It's a maintenance type thing. No problem. Then we've got, obviously anything that's acute in health or medical, and whether it's emergent or you talked about the orthopedic surgeon, that definitely fits that model. But then when we get into this kind of like this good to great thinking, and we're optimizing now, and we're trying to help a person to achieve higher levels of performance, not just good health, but great health, or really doing everything they can to maximize the lifespan or the longevity. So that's kind of where I think a lot of the service providers like me exist. And that's what I would encourage any wellness consumer to do, is eventually get to that level of optimization for themselves. And as you mentioned, you know, you can do a lot of that just by picking up a book, listening to a podcast, whatever. And, you know, making that commitment is really where I'm at, more so than saying, you know, let's have you make purchases. But I love that parallel, and you know, I want to think of what I do and my colleagues do as being an optimizer, and I have to thank you for that. So we're almost done with these parallels in business, but I've really had a lot of fun reading and rereading your book. So in business, a professional who understands how to help others with service and bring in business is termed a rainmaker. That's also in some various movies and series, and we love that term. If we turn things around a bit, though, is it possible for a fitness consumer to use your vetting processes to become their own wellness maker? You know, so you're making your own wellness rain, or however we're going to say that, by making the right buying decision to fit their needs and interests. So any comments or you know, responses you have to that?
Well, there could be some parallels. For example, well, let's go back to the, you know, to the term rainmaker. We use the term rainmaker in our book in a positive way, by meaning that in most organizations, there is someone that is highly skilled at winning client business. Right. And this, you know, this term rainmaker has been applied to them. You know, there's the John Grisham book, you know, and movie from, you know, from a decade or a few ago. But we use this term in a positive way, right? Mm-hmm. So I think where you're going is, can you take that concept of a rainmaker, someone that is skilled at creating awareness and understanding and interest and respect and trust and winning client business, and spinning that around to an individual that is equally skilled at bringing wellness to their life? Is kind of the
precise?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting idea, and I haven't given it I haven't given it a lot of thought, but let's go with it. What are your thoughts? Like, is there an angle that you're seeing with regard to the parallels between, say, a wellness rainmaker and a client rainmaker, and maybe we'll run with it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I interpret rainmaker in a positive light, and you know, clearly what speaks to me about anyone who's a rainmaker is they are good communicators. You know, they have that communicative ability, whether it's developed or it's a gift or a combination. Well, the same thing seems to be, or at least from my experience, seems to be true in these high achievers, you know, the high achievers in health and fitness, wellness and performance. They go through some processes to help guide their decision making. And I think a lot of the things that people are doing, and I use the term vetting process, the high achievers are good at vetting out the resources and choices to get their wellness. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's the whole parallel. We don't have to go through them all again, but you know, what succeeds in business exceeds in personal health as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just thought of something when you were talking about that, some of those common traits of successful or high achievement people. One of the things we found in studying rainmakers, in our book, we interviewed over 40 successful rainmakers from a wide variety of professions. But one of the things we found is that they take a long-term view. They're not short-term goal motivated in the extreme. In other words, they have a very long horizon that they are looking at, and they're oftentimes patient. And I think that there, you know, maybe some parallels to that as it relates to health and fitness and wellness is that I think oftentimes the most successful people at bringing health and wellness to their lives are not trying to make it all happen tomorrow. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to lose 20 pounds next week or run a marathon next month or do an Ironman 3 months from now. But I think that they have a more realistic perspective on time, and maybe they're looking out decades. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love this concept of lifetime body because it's helped me think about, well, how do I want my body to feel when I'm 75, not 50, right? Mm-hmm. There's also this thing that I think another parallel that I thought of when I heard you talking is that this component of respect or professional credibility that exists in rainmakers, successful rainmakers, is they have to be really good at what they do. If you're going to be successful long term as an accountant or a surgeon or a physical therapist, I don't care how good you are at building relationships and building awareness. If you're really not good at what you do, you're probably not going to be successful for long. I think people that take their wellness and health seriously become very knowledgeable. They do take their competence and wellness knowledge seriously. And they're like passionate consumers of good information, and they are oftentimes encyclopedias of health and fitness information. So I think that's another parallel. You know, I think that good rainmakers care about people. They care about service. And I think that good people that care about their health, they care about their friends, they care about their family, they want to be of service to others, and they like to share, you know, their, you know, wellness information with others. So I think that they're, you know, while it's an interesting, connection that you're making, I do think that there's some overlap there.
Yeah, I think it's very strong, and I don't believe I could have said that any better than you did, Doug. Last thing about the book, in the concluding section of the book, you offer a vision of the future that identifies a life worth living. It's a Venn diagram of the interplay of pursuits that are three things: A, challenging; B, significant; and that C, use your talents. Can you relate this to success with health and fitness pursuits?
You know, when we wrote the book, we know that there's a component of success in expert services that comes from feeling that what you do matters. And many people in the professional services and expert service categories, it's not a job for them. You know, it really is a calling, in much the same way that someone is called to teaching or education or coaching or being a financial advisor. I think the most successful among us don't see it as a job. They see it as, I mean, there's a lot of purpose in it for them. There's a lot of meaning. They're not trying to sell. They're trying to serve people, you know? And I believe that's true, right? And I think as it relates to our personal, our personal health and well-being, maybe the overlap there is, I think those that stick with programs, you know, not the diet of the month people, not to be judgmental, but, you know, the people that truly take a lifetime view of their health and well-being and fitness, they do find purpose in it. You know, they find meaning in it, they find love in it, they find joy in it. I think that if you can find the things that do bring meaning and purpose and joy and happiness in your daily health, you know, and well-being endeavors, I think we will be more successful. We won't toss it to the curb, you know, next month. You know, it's something that, hey, I want to be doing this next year. Mm-hmm. I want to be doing this 5 years from now. I want to be doing this, you know, when I'm 80. And, you know, and so I do think that I think that that component of it, you know, matters. The other thing that I will say that I really got a lot of value out of in your podcast is this idea that you came up with called animal fit. Mm-hmm. Is that it? Animal fit?
Animal fit.
Yeah. And I haven't read the book yet. I've read your previous books, but it's on my short list for 2019. I hadn't really thought about that a lot. And I think oftentimes we try to compare ourselves to others. And, you know, when we go to, you know, the track or CrossFit or the spin class or the yoga class, you know, we're looking around the room and we're like, God, that person is so good. Why can't I do that? And I'm guilty of that, right? Sure. We look around the room and we're like, you know, why is this person running so much faster than me? Or why can they lift more than me? Or why are they doing a back bend and I can't hardly touch my toes? And when I started thinking, when you started proposing these different body types, it gave me a lot of patience with myself to think about what my body is built for, you know, and what I'm naturally maybe more inclined to be good at. And I think that that has helped me take a more realistic view of me as an individual, not to compare myself with the incomparable PK, you know, the mm-hmm. barrel chested PK,
shout out,
and the wolf John Zombro, you know, and just to you know, understand what Doug's good at, you know, and to optimize, you know, my body type.
Yeah, I feel that matchup quite strongly, you know, so you guys obviously put a lot of thought into this and research, vision for the future for business, things that are challenging, significant, and use your talents. Well, that's the same, you know, methodology that I'm using with my work and, of course, with Animal Fit. It's like, hey, let's make your fitness program fit you. Embrace who you are, what you're good at, what someone else is good at. Understand that, you know, not just make peace with it, but celebrate it and leverage it to 10x. And so that's kind of, you know, just what I felt. And I think you brought that forth that, you know, whether one is in the business world or the, you know, personal performance world, they're really the same world. And, you know, much appreciating, I'm much appreciative of the work that you guys did there. So now this is like the drum roll, you know, I get to talk a little bit more about you as a really amazing person and you know, move away from talking about your work. So you're an avid exerciser, you're an athlete, you've done a lot of things, and I know a few of them, I don't know all of them, but I know you've competed in a number of triathlons, cycling events, including some very long distance ones, which you might want to talk about, trail ultras and other things, lifetime body fitness training, etc. So say a little bit about what you do for you know, your fitness and training and your philosophy about that.
Well, first of all, thank you for, you know, for some of those kind words. One of the reasons I enjoy hanging around you is you make me feel good about myself. And I think everybody that you're around, you make feel good about themselves. So thank you for that. I do self-identify as an athlete. But I don't think that anyone would ever classify me as an elite athlete. I have never been an elite in any sport, although it's a big part of who I am, you know, just being athletic, being active, and participating in sports has been a part of my life. You know, I'm 52 now, since I was in first grade, or, you know, whenever we start out with T-ball or, you know, or whatever we started out with. And I love being active. I love the outdoors. If it's a sunny day, and it's not minus 20 here in Montana, I will be outdoors getting my health and wellness rather than going to the gym. If I have a choice, I love being outdoors. You've helped me understand this through Animal Fit. I have gravitated towards endurance sports. And part of that was just due to the fact that I kind of sucked at things that were not endurance sports. And so I think that my body is built for low intensity endurance sports. That's what, you know, my natural gifts are. And I've gravitated over the last few decades to, you know, cycling events, running events, triathlons, and the longer the better. You know, I just thrive at those longer events and I enjoy them. I didn't appreciate 2 decades ago why I gravitated to those the way that you've helped me understand now, that that's just what my natural body gifts are. Not that I was winning the marathon or the Ironman or something like this, but that's just what I was relatively good at and what I enjoyed, and why you'll never see me in a powerlifting competition or playing lineman on a football team or, you know, anything like that. So anyway.
Well, I would say, you know, you've been very successful at embracing, you know, your inner animal, your, you know, gifts and abilities. But I also know that, you're multifaceted, you're not closed-minded, you do a lot of other diverse training and probably just put it in the ratios that work best for, you know, your unique mix. I think we all got inspired by that. It's refreshing to hear, you know, somebody that is happy with, you know, their exercise, their sports, their body. You know, I think we need more of that, you know, instead of high levels of dissatisfaction. So thanks for representing, you know, the high side, Doug. I also know you to be an outdoorsman, a hunter, a fisherman, a foodie, and also a fellow field-to-table enthusiast like myself. Let's get into that for a moment. You know, if you can share a perspective on those activities and also, you know, food quality, sharing, anything that you think is pertinent there.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes. I didn't have a name for it until you came along and coined it the plant-based diet, but I love that term. And for many of us in Montana and places like Montana, you know, hunting's a part of our social culture. It's a part of the fabric of our communities, and much more so than it may be in New York City or San Francisco, you know. And it has nothing to do with Democrats, Republicans, or libertarians. It's just like everybody, you know, hunts in Montana. You know, it's certainly a much higher percentage of people than in other places. I hunt not because I'm a trophy hunter. I don't hunt to go out there and get the biggest, you know, head on my wall or anything like that. I truly hunt because I love the health of the meat that that it provides. And, you know, before there were all these labels placed upon foods like free range, organic, grass-fed, you know, topics that, you know, that many people in cities aspire to now, it's like, well, I'm going to go buy these foods because they're the best. That's what wild game is, yes. Right? I mean, these are animals that are wandering, you know, in the wild, that are eating grass, that are not in a pen, that are, you know, it's as organic as it gets. And so I hunt for the table, and it's a big part of my life. And so I love to make it taste good, and I love to make it into foods and meals that people that may not think they like wild game are surprised at, like, wow, this is an amazing meal. Like, you could see this meal in a 5-star restaurant in Chicago, you know, it's like that good. And so, you know, lately we've been eating a lot of smoked duck. I went on a duck hunting trip out to Eastern Montana back in December with some really good friends. And many people think that they don't like duck, and I smoke it, and it's a very rich food. I have found that I will add it in small doses to foods, and it brings out a lot of flavor to it. I think most people would describe my diet as kind of a hybrid of like Mediterranean and maybe Central Asian. By no means am I like some, you know, accomplished chef, but I like vegetables. I've embraced your idea of as many colors in the pot as you can. You know, when I usually start with my vegetables, and if it doesn't end up looking like a rainbow, then, you know, I just need to go to the grocery store, you know, and then I add in some sort of, you know, wild game to that, which may be wild salmon, or bison, or elk, or something, you know, along those lines that we have an abundance of here in Montana, and it's healthy, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think we belong to a club, essentially, and it's not just a fraternity. It's it crosses both genders, but you know, people who value the land and the animals and people and this whole concept of food is not just tactical nutrition, but it's you know, it's deep sustenance and nourishment and celebration and sharing, and all those things come together at the dining table. And you know, you are a great representative of that. And I think you know, it's nice to hear people, you know, have people hear that perspective. Also, I think your vitality, which is abundant, it's probably coming through the microphone, but I can definitely see it sitting across the room from you. You know, comes largely from you're eating those high quality foods, which have all those labels that you described previously. So this has just been a wonderful learning experience for me and chance to visit with you, Doug. You know, ultimately, if you're going to get down to one or two tips, what advice do you have for our listeners related to making good decisions towards healthy lifestyle practices?
It really comes down to, first of all, I've learned a lot from you and for your listeners that have been listening to your 30 plus podcast. You know, it will sound like I'm just repeating back to you the things that you have taught us, but I've really embraced them. And, you know, I think, you know, being active every day is just a big part of, you know, longevity, you know, in the absence of some sort of chronic illness that we can't foresee, right? You know, I think just moving the body every day, and you've talked a lot about this, you know, in some of your recent podcasts about, you know, just get up. Don't just sit there. I mean, most of us have office jobs. Many of us have office jobs, and we are required to sit, but don't sit for long, you know, and just get up and move the body and move it in ways that fits your body type and brings you joy, right? And so so I believe, you know, just being active, you know, trying to move as much as you can every day. And some of that comes down to choices that we make in life. I'll just give you a perfect example. With my work, I could travel a lot more. And I have just found that the older I get, travel, especially to places that force me to be on a plane all day long, just makes my body feel bad. And so I have just elected not to travel nearly as much as I could or possibly should if I were truly trying to optimize my business, because if I'm sitting on a plane for 7 hours to get to Boston, a lot, like I can do that once a month, but if I'm doing that every week, it has effects on my body and I don't feel good. So I elect not to travel on an airplane as often as I could. I've elected to, another choice I've made is I've elected to live in a part of town now, here in Bozeman, where I don't need a car. very often. It happens to work out that I have a senior in high school that happens to love having a car. And so she gets my car 80, 90% of the time. And I live within a mile radius of my house. You know, I'm 10-minute walk from work at the university. I'm 10-minute walk from, you know, from the gym, 10-minute walk from the grocery store. And so I have made choices in my life that allow me to get my GDA, my general daily activity, without having to get in a car or, you know, on a bus or other things like that. And it goes back to just choices we make and trying to be active and move our bodies. Mm-hmm. So
That's brilliant. That's wellness in action. Folks, hope everyone's been taking notes. Well, this has been fabulous. And, you know, thank you, Doug, so much for your time. Just closing things out, is there either A, anything else you'd like to share or any information you'd like to provide where folks can learn a little bit more about your work?
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. For anyone that happens to be interested in the book, you can find it on Amazon. The book's called How Clients Buy. My co-author is Tom McMakin. We also have a website for the book called howclientsbuy.net. I also have a personal website called fletcherandcompany.net. And if you're, you know, interested, reach out to me and say hi. And anyway, thanks for having me on today.
Hey, thank you. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Lifetime Body Podcast. If you'd like more information on the Lifetime Body publications and services that can help you to achieve ultimate wellness and look, feel, and perform your best, check out thelifetimebody.com. And if you're digging this content, please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, this is the Lifetime Body, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime.